welcome to Happy Horror Time Podcast. My name is Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert, and we are here today with one of the stars of A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 5, The Dream Child, the lovely, the talented Erica Anderson.
Woo! Hi, you guys.
Hi, Erica. We're so happy to have you here. Thank you for taking the time.
You.
I just looked on the very trusty Wikipedia, which, you know, is 100% truth, of course.
Yeah.
But it said that you're originally from Tulsa, Oklahoma. Is that correct?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So how did you always know you wanted to be in movies, or how did you get involved in acting?
Well, I did it from when I was little. I was in, you know, church productions and school plays. And when I was really young, I would put on puppet shows for the neighborhood. And I was always into that kind of thing. So it was kind of in my blood already. And then after college, I moved to LA and I started going to the movies all the time, all the time. And I was kind of obsessed with it. And so it was almost like I put it on hold to get my education. But I had a minor in theater, too, so it was always kind of there. But at a certain point, I decided to really take it seriously, and I moved to New York, and I studied in New York, and then I came back, and Nightmare was really the first big movie that I got.
That's awesome. And then you were also a model before you became an actress, right? You
did. Still am. Can you believe it?
No.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I mean, I'm still
doing it.
No, so. That's incredible. Can you tell us about, like, how did you get involved in the modeling career? And did that lead you also to acting, or did you kind of do it both together?
Well, I feel like in my mind, they were always very separate, because, I mean, some people would think that, you know, it helps because you get really comfortable in front of the camera and that kind of thing. But they're two very different things. And when you're a model, you kind of... you rely on looks a lot, and you convey a lot with the way you look. Mm-hmm. But with acting, you use so much more than that. And that's more what I was interested in at the time. So that's why I wanted to do it correctly. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many people that dismiss models when they become actresses, and they just think, you know, it's whatever, you're eye candy. So
I can totally relate.
I mean, yes, Tim had to live his entire life being only eye candy. It's tough, right?
I mean, they're connected, but they're very different.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, but that's great. I think so. I mean, obviously getting into before we get right into Nightmare 5, what was going on in your life right around when you auditioned for Nightmare 5? Like, what were you doing, and what brought you to that audition?
I was living in LA, and my agent called me and asked me if I would be interested. And I jumped at the chance, because when I was growing up, I always loved scary movies.
Nice.
I love it.
I love that.
So of course I wanted to audition for it. And during the audition process, I was told later that they had a very hard time trying to find somebody for the role of Greta, because they couldn't find a girl that they thought was pretty that was willing to get really ugly.
That's awesome.
And I didn't care. So yeah. It was actually really fun.
It's funny, because we've talked to a few different horror movie celebrities, and it's like, you always ask them, how'd you get involved? And they say, well, you know, I got the audition. I didn't really know much about it. And I love that you're like, I knew it. I jumped at it.
Yeah, I knew it. I was so into it. Yeah.
So are you a big horror fan then? Like, mm-hmm. in general?
Yeah, I love horror movies.
Oh my God.
But I like the more psychological ones more than like straight up gore. Although some of those are really good too. But
I always like favorite?
Halloween is my favorite holiday.
Oh, that's his.
I mean, I love it. I love the whole costume thing. I love being scared. I love haunted houses and all that stuff. It's so much fun.
Yes, I know. No, you're preaching to the choir.
Am I speaking your language?
Well, no, because I throw a big Halloween party every year, with the exception of this year, unfortunately. But I just. Oh, okay. Do you love all the decorations and fog machines and black lights?
Love
and stuff?
It. Yeah, I love it all. I mean, when I was young, my parents really got into it, and it was so hilarious to me, because one year my mom somehow got a hold of a gorilla outfit. Oh, and no. She came to my elementary school dressed as a gorilla and just walked up and down the halls and didn't say anything to anyone and scared the living shit out of everybody.
Did they, apparently, how did they know
the principal of the school knew that she was doing this and gave the okay for her to do this. And she came busting into my classroom with this gorilla outfit on. And one poor little boy wet his pants and she just went up to him and she said, "It's okay, honey. I'm just a mom."
wait, I'm sorry. I'm dying right now.
And it was just her, but they got really into it. They would hide behind the house and kids would come up, you know, to ring the doorbell for trick or treat. And she'd come up behind them and scare the shit out of them.
Wait.
That Walt Disney's Thrilling, Chilling Sounds of the Haunted House. And we'd crank the volume. So when people came up to the front door, they would hear that. Have you ever heard that record?
I feel like I have.
I mean,
you must have.
Yeah. I mean, it's gotta be something that
it's a Disney record. And it was like, I feel like everybody who's like, you know, 35 to 60 probably heard that record when they were growing up.
That's me. You know?
I'm still picturing your, wait, what grade were you? I'm sorry. I need to get more on this story about your mom.
When mom did that, probably like fifth grade, maybe.
That is incredible.
Well,
it was amazing.
Still exist?
It was amazing. What?
Does the gorilla costume still exist?
It's not around anymore. No. But there were so many things that happened. You know, my dad, I had a party because my birthday is a week before Halloween. I had a birthday party when I was really young, and my aunt was dressed up in a witch outfit. She was dressed up in a witch outfit and she was in the backyard hiding behind a log pile. But my dad was in on it. And my dad said, "Girls, what is that in the backyard?" And she's back there smoking a cigarette. And you can see the cigarette lighting up, you know, the little ember burning. Uh-huh. And all the kids were scared to death. It was so funny. They loved it. So I think they just kind of instilled it in me.
You have the coolest family ever.
Yeah.
Like, they were awesome. Yeah, that they is were something, awesome parents.
Oh my God. I have a million questions I still want to ask about the gorilla, but I'm going to keep moving forward. That's amazing. I'm just like caught off guard. I love it. When you auditioned for Greta, what was the audition like? Like, what did they have you do? Because that's they had such an iconic death scene, but did you have to do anything from that for the audition, or did they just want
you? I don't remember. I mean, typically you do two or three scenes, and usually you do either the most verbose scene or you do the hardest scene. Mm-hmm. I don't really remember which scenes they had me do, but they asked me flat out if I would mind, you know, prosthetic makeup. And obviously, I mean, I knew what was going to happen to me. I knew that my face was going to grow to this huge, disgusting, distorted thing. And I didn't care at all. I was actually excited about it. And I think it was my enthusiasm that probably got
No, well, one thing I think we love about Greta is she's such a fun-loving, carefree character, you know, like right from the beginning, she's just like cool and fun and easygoing. And then she's being forced into being a model by her mother, which did you draw anything from your own experiences as a model to put into the character? Or did
I've seen moms like that. I mean, my mom didn't even want me to model. She did not want me to do that at all. But I have seen, you know, it's the classic stage mom thing, right? Like you hear about it all the time and you see it. And fortunately, I didn't come from that, but I've seen it enough. But I know that horrible, crushing feeling when you do not want to do what your parents want you to do, you know, for a living.
Like,
and that's kind of the situation she was in.
That's what I was going to ask you about. Sorry, the connection went a little weird when I think you were talking about the actress who played your mother.
Yes.
What was her name? Because I couldn't even find her on IMDb.
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But I don't know that she's done a lot of stuff. So I looked for her before too on IMDb and I couldn't find her. I'm sure that if you go to IMDb, you can find her name, but not her pictures. And I don't know, but I loved her.
So she was cool. Like, that's what I was going to ask. What was she like outside the filming? She was just totally normal and not at all like.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, she had a blast doing that.
She was
kind of like Cruella de Vil, you know?
Yeah, I could see that.
It is. Yeah. And it's a great character. It's like, it's so funny how like in so many of the nightmare movies, the parents are just awful people.
I know, right?
just don't care about their kids dying, don't want to help, don't believe them.
Classic. Yeah, like it's so obvious, but they don't see it, you know.
Yeah.
Especially in this movie where all the teens are totally connected to the parents, especially in that scene where they are graduating and they take the picture together.
Yeah, that was great. That was really fun.
So moving forward in Greta's time on the screen, so after Dan dies, you know, the guy dies first.
The Alice's hottest one in the movie.
Hot Dan. we like to call him Hot Dan.
He had
Dan.
A really awesome death scene, too.
Yeah, I mean, really, really amazing. Awesome. But your character, Greta, seems totally devastated by Dan's death. So we were wondering, like, almost as much as Alice, like, we were wondering, do you think that Greta was holding a torch for Dan, or was something going on behind their back?
We just want to make
it
a fun.
No. I think she was just really sad for her friend, you know? I mean, think about it. If you're in high school and you've got this little group of friends and one of them dies,
that's
pretty devastating. Yeah. You're young and you're not really equipped to deal with that kind of thing. I think Greta was very close with all of her friends, and I think she just tried to absorb a lot of the sorrow and help in any way that she could.
And it's good, and you're right. It's like so many horror movies. What I love about my favorite part of horror movies sometimes is how people treat death like it's just nothing. Like sometimes Tim and I will watch and like someone's friend died and they'll be like, oh, you know, like anybody would have that reaction.
Completely
like they would
unrealistic.
Yeah. Exactly. So yeah.
No, yeah. Totally. Or the thing that gets me all the time when you watch these horror films is you just get mad and you start yelling at the screen because it's like, come on, you idiot. Don't do that. Everybody knows you can't do that. I've seen a million of these movies. I know what's going to happen. Why don't you know?
I know. No, you're right. And it's like people are so, and again, like we were talking about the parents, like parents never believe their kids. It's like never even give it a second thought. No, nobody. Yes, all your friends just died, but totally, you're just crazy. Nothing's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that. You know, another part when you're upset over Dan's death, you're holding all these like creepy dolls. And yeah, what were those dolls as creepy in the movie as they
looked? Yeah, they were super creepy. In fact, I kept the doll that was, you know, I had that doll that in the black, when everything turns black and white and then the doll falls and cracks and all that.
Yeah.
There was a doll that it was fashioned on, and I kept that doll for the longest time, but it was in a trunk. And every time I would get it out, I would look at it and think, why am I hanging on to this? It's so creepy. But I did. And then eventually I let it go. But dolls are just creepy in general. Don't you think?
I agree. I mean, I did have dolls growing up. I don't, a Barbie dream house.
Of course you did.
No, it's okay. Christmas 1989.
Barbies aren't creepy.
I know they're gorgeous.
No, wait. So you kept that doll for that. When you say let it go, do you mean like throw it away or like sell it to someone?
Yeah, I think I moved and I just thought, well, there's no reason for me to have this. And it just went out with all the crap that left that house.
Oh, no.
Oh, I think Tim and I would have paid. Tim and I would have paid like thousands.
Terrible. I know, but you know, you don't think about that stuff.
I know.
Like, I never would have thought that there would be conventions like there are now. I never would have thought about that back then.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, when did you get involved in conventions?
That's Mikey.
Tell us the Mikey story.
I met him at a convention. I did one convention. I think it was in Texas. And they decided to get the whole cast together from Nightmare on Elm Street. And we all kind of did it together. And it was before they were packaging movie by movie. So they had like Jennifer Rubin was there and she was a friend of mine from back when.
She's a dream warrior.
What?
She's the dream warrior.
Yeah. she and a bunch of other people were doing that convention. And so I got reunited with a lot of the people that I knew, and I met a lot of the people that I hadn't met that were also in the franchise. And Mikey was there that weekend. That's awesome. We started talking, and he started putting together things. And so I did a lot more of them.
No, that's so cool, especially for like people like us who are fans.
Ricky,
like to know.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's a fun weekend to do.
And also just like that you embrace that, you know what I mean? And want to be there because the fans care so much about these movies, obviously. And so,
well, that's why it's so thrilling, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird for me because lots of times the fans know my dialogue like better than I remember it. Like, because I haven't thought about it in so long.
You mean flashing your teeth for the paparazzi?
That one I know because
I that's good. No. Back to with the film, like the production, I've heard and I know we've watched, you know, like Never Sleep Again and the documentary, that the production on it was so rushed that literally like the script was being written and rewritten as you were filming. Was it total like chaos on the set, or was that did
no.
not?
No. I mean, that's how soap operas are, I hear. You know, I mean, you're handed your script the morning of, and they are constantly making changes. And I think that happens, you know, in certain films too. You know, if there's a problem and they have to do a rewrite, and if something's not working, you just have to be really on your toes and be able to handle that and sort of roll with the punches. It was not chaos ever. Yeah. Not
that's
at all.
Cool. Yeah. And it was so it was always just like a fun environment while you were there, even though no
really fun environment. The only thing that was a bit of a drag was the prosthetics, you know, were so long and involved. And I think it was something crazy, like 3.5 hours to do my makeup.
Oh, gosh.
And it was in different stages. And once the makeup's on, you're in it. So it's a little difficult.
How did you eat lunch that day?
It was gross.
Well, that's like getting to that scene. That's a big question one to ask you about. I mean, obviously,
you're limited. I'll just say you're limited on what you can eat because it's, you know, the prosthetic itself comes out to about here. So there's like this sort of
tunnel.
Yeah. So you basically are supposed to eat, drink through a straw. But as you can imagine, when you're on set for like 10 hours, you get a little hungry.
Yeah.
And after you do that for a day or two, it's like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. And I remember one day we were served spaghetti for lunch.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It collected in that thing. It was just in there. And I'm under the hot lights and it smelled and it was nasty. And yeah, it was not fun. And, you know, here's the other thing. You wrap. And everybody gets to leave, but not me because I've got to take off all this stuff. So it just kind of, you know, it was difficult. That was a bit difficult. Guy who designed the makeup, Todd Masters, was so fun. He was really fun to work with. And we're still friends now. And so, you know, I think everybody made the best of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we were going to ask about with the death scene is literally, I would say, one of the most iconic death scenes of the entire series. I mean, and also that's where I think Freddie, to me, he has two lines that people quote through the series. One is "Welcome to primetime, bitch." And the second is "Bon appetit, bitch." Yeah. Which
was that improv or
that? I'm not sure. You'd have to ask Robert about that, but it was so perfect. And Rolling Stone called it the catchphrase of the summer, the year the movie came out. So it was like, I hear that all the time.
That's what I was going to say.
It's like, so much in my head that when I go to a dinner party and somebody says bon appetit, I always hear bitch.
It is funny that like, but Freddie, like literally his two most iconic lines has to have bitch on the end.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Good old Freddie. What was Robert Englund like working with, like, especially in that scene?
Oh, he was super fun. He was really fun. He was great.
We've heard he's a big storyteller.
You know, I think sometimes, you know, you would be intimidated by someone like him because A, he's in that crazy costume and he's also really the star of the franchise. So I think a lot of people might be intimidated, but he was always super friendly and super down to earth. And, you know, he hung out with us and really easy to talk to. And, you know, it was great.
And we've heard similar from, because we've talked to a few people and then they all say, like, they say he tells great stories, that he's like, you know, like the nicest person.
I don't
think
I've ever heard a bad Freddy Krueger story. Robert Englund.
Oh, yeah. Freddy Krueger, on the other hand.
Two different people.
Child murder. Great guy. No. How many days did it take to film that death scene? Because you said, I mean, obviously they're long days, but do you know how many days?
Yeah, I don't really remember, but I think, you know, the whole movie we shot within a month.
That's crazy.
Everything was kind of,
It's not CGI. It's practical.
No,
effects.
Thank God. Yeah. It was before all that stuff.
No, I know.
Which is better.
So another thing that is that scene is known for is that apparently the MPAA cut out a lot of parts.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, are there, I don't know if you know the specifics of it, but like, do you know stuff that we didn't get to see? Like, I've heard things about like that he's feeding you like your insides or something.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I'm just wondering, like, how
well, he far rips open my stomach, and inside my stomach is cupcakes and cake and candy and all the things that a model is not supposed to eat.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
And so, wow.
It came out of my stomach and into my mouth. And, you know, it was just, it was gross. It was really gross. And I think that's why they cut a bunch of it out, because it was pretty disgusting.
And what about the fridge scene? Like, when you're hanging out of the fridge?
It was hard not to laugh. Yeah, it was really hard not to laugh.
Oh,
it was really fun.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah. When Alice sees her. Yeah,
and
yeah.
She's trying to help her out.
And then, of course, and then the door shuts and it says, "Die, bitch."
Yeah.
Right?
Gotta get that bitch in there somewhere.
I mean, so who added that? Do you have any? I mean, I know I'm asking you about a movie from a long time ago, but do you remember who put "die, bitch" up there?
No, I'm sure it was a production designer. You know, I'm sure.
So one of the things you had said in Never Sleep Again, that the one thing that you kind of wish about the movie that's a little bit more scary, less comical, which I kind of agree. Like, to be honest,
you know what I mean? Like, a lot of them sort of got funny. And yeah, I just, the first one was so dark.
Yeah.
And
definitely agree.
He was really scary and ominous. And then as time goes on, you know, the catchphrases make it funny. And then because he gets a good response from the catchphrases, then they want more of that. And that's just the way movies work.
Yeah. You know? And by the way, just so you know, like, I 100% agree with you. I do think like it was starting to get more comical, but as much as I absolutely love part five and there's so many fun scenes, your scene, the most iconic, you are right that there's definitely a difference in tone between the beginning one. And then it gets, you know, Freddy die bitch and bon appetit.
I mean,
bitch, you know?
Still scary. It's still scary. It's just, you're scary than laughing, which is a hard line to walk.
Yeah.
And another thing is that part five has so many serious themes combined with the comedy, like with, you know, like abortion and a baby and like that kind of stuff mixed with bon appetit, bitch, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's so crazy.
No, it totally is.
I feel like even Nightmare 3 had some really scary stuff in it.
Yeah.
You know? And it was less comic. But I just think with each installment, it got more and more and more. Just somehow a little more comic book.
Yeah. No, you're right. So when the filming was done after that very rushed month, was there a premiere?
Yeah,
for
was
it?
There a red carpet? This is my favorite question.
It was my first red carpet, and it was at the Chinese Theater.
Awesome.
And we all went together, and it was really, really fun. I got to bring a lot of friends of mine. And, you know, obviously they'd never been to a movie premiere. It was my first premiere, but I remember I went out and bought this really fancy dress, and we were all really excited about it. And just like kind of all sitting there sort of holding hands when the movie started. And that feeling that you get when you've never seen anything, because we didn't go to dailies. We didn't do that. To see it for the first time was pretty spectacular on giant screen. Because the Chinese is a giant
seats?
Theater.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I love
it
that
was
theater.
Really great.
That's like the best answer that I want to hear. Yeah. It's like, because I feel like, no, because like we think of these movies, we absolutely love these movies. And that's what I wanted to know about, the feeling of like the first time seeing it on the big screen. And when did you become aware of all the fandom behind the series? Or did you know before? Because
I knew about it before, because I was a fan.
Yeah.
You know, I knew about it before, but I think it's grown. You know, over
thanks
time,
internet,
like each one, it grows and it grows and it grows. And now you've got little kids that are into it, even though it's an older movie, there's kids that are super into it. And there's fans that are older. There's fans that are young now. And you see that when you go to the conventions. When I do a convention, my cheeks hurt from smiling so much, because everybody is so kind and they're so sweet. And it's just so nice to meet them. And it kind of validates, you know, what you're doing and why you do this.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, seriously, just want to say thank you for saying that, because it does and it makes us as fans feel great to see these people that we, you know, idolize because they're in these movies we love, to be so appreciative for these opportunities and to look back on it with such fond memories. You know, I mean, what's funny is that even though it was, you knew there was fandom behind it, did you think 31 years later that people would still be talking?
I really didn't. I kind of thought, you know, I mean, and at the time they weren't that old, right? Like I was in five. It wasn't that old. When did the first one come out? Like
84.
85? 84. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So this is like 4 or 5 years later. So
but you're like in the, I mean, like you're in the, I always think the first five are the best. Like you're, it's the 1989, yeah. Like there's no CGI. It's all practical effects. Like,
yeah.
It's like you have a hot young cast. Like, I think it's so, you're like in such an iconic series.
Yeah,
it is.
I like that. Yeah. Hot young cast.
Really, listen, it's the truth.
I'm so grateful to be a part of all of that because, yeah. You know, I don't really do that much acting anymore. So mm-hmm. just to know that something that I did that long ago is still resonating is just kind of amazing.
It's a legacy. Yeah, it really it is. It's a legacy. Yeah. Like everyone has different legacies and it's just, it is cool to be a part of that. Do you keep in touch with any of the cast or crew members in the, from the film or?
Well, I live in New York now, so they're all on the West Coast and I don't really see them, but when I do, it's like we pick up right where we left off.
That's,
you know,
so cool.
And we still have the same kind of like relationships. Like I did a convention, Joe Seeley was there and oh. It was like we were best friends all over again. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you kind of just immediately go back to it. You must have friends like that, that you of don't course. See all the time. But as oh. soon as you see them, it's like you never missed a day. You know?
Yeah. And it's almost like, you know, it's like I have friends from like a theater group I was in and it's like you start talking about that like it was yesterday.
Nerd.
Yeah. I have nerd. No, but you know what I mean? Like, I feel like it's like when you have that common memory, you can always go back and there's always stories and inside jokes.
And plus, and going through, because you know, makeup for the long hours and everything, you went through something that no one else, like Matt and I, haven't done that. So it's like you always have that bond.
Does take me a few hours to do my hair.
Well, but you look terrible. Just kidding.
Well, then so when you're at the conventions, what's the most common thing people say to you or ask you? Is it the Bon Appetit bitch line, or what is the most?
No, it's gnash my teeth for the paparazzi.
I love it.
That is great.
One. And yeah, this is that one. Followed crazy. By Bon Appetit, bitch. You know, also, it's like maybe they don't want to be disrespectful, so they don't want to come right up and say Bon Appetit, bitch. It's easier to say gnash your teeth, right?
Yeah.
So that seems to be the one.
Your hair in the pool scene, the ponytail, looks so good. But FYI.
Thank you.
It is the cutest
really pony. Nice.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously you've done a lot of other things in your career, and I know we're touching mostly on Nightmare 5, but the one thing I did want to ask you about, because I'm a huge, huge fan of it, was Twin Peaks. And obviously, you know, you were on, it was like the show within the show of Twin Peaks. It was the soap opera Invitation to Love. Yeah. And I just wanted to, like, how did you get it? First off, yeah, I absolutely grew up loving Twin Peaks. And
me too. I thought it was one of the best things I'd ever seen on television.
Yeah. Same. How did you get involved with Twin Peaks? And what was it like working with David Lynch and Mark Frost?
I got involved because I auditioned for it. Uh-huh. So that was it. And I didn't really get to work with David when we shot Invitation to Love. He was supposed to direct it, but he was working on Wild at Heart with Nicolas Cage. And they were behind. So he got stuck. I shouldn't even say that. But he ended up doing that. So Mark stepped in and directed our stuff. And it was such a great, it was so weird, first of all. Like I'm playing twins and they could not be more opposite.
Yeah.
But we shot in that beautiful Frank Lloyd Wright house, you know, in LA. And it was just, it was a really, really great day. And I think because the script was really almost plain, you know, we started having fun with it and we kind of started to improv a little bit and we made it fun and we were doing a lot of things that weren't in the script and Mark really liked that. But I ran into David at a party after and he, I don't think he really, that's not what he wanted us to do.
Really? Wait, what did he want?
It's not really what he wanted us to do. I think he wanted us to play it straight.
Oh, well, you know? I love
like I'm stroking Chet and then I look at my hand because he's got all that goop in his hair, like that kind of thing. That those are the little things that we did that were really silly, but I don't think it really worked for him. And I was really sad about that.
That's so funny because it's like, well, first, it is so over the top, which I love, but it's like Twin Peaks is such a weird, it's so funny to hear like that someone said like, no, that's too much when it comes to Twin Peaks.
I know, right?
I feel like anything goes.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, for an actor, it's fun to just like stretch a little bit and improv and do what you want to do and see how it goes. And if it works, you kind of keep doing it. And we had a blast that day. Everybody was really fun. We had a blast doing it. And it was all pretty silly anyway. And as you know, it's a soap opera within a soap opera. And it's supposed to kind of sort of show what might happen in the series before it happens. So I'm twins. And then you find out that Laura Palmer's twin cousin, Maddie, is
right. You have dark hair.
So it's that
dark
kind
hair
of
and
thing.
Glasses.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We had a great time doing that. It was really fun. I just wish, I mean, for the series, I wish it would have continued on, but it, you know, near the end, it started to get a little too fantastical, and I understand.
Yeah. Did you watch the reboot or whatever?
I did too.
I
liked all the cameos, but I just don't think it holds a candle to the original.
I was going to wait for you to say that first.
Yeah. I just think the OG was so much better.
It was. And also I remember because I was like only maybe 10 when Twin Peaks came out. But
you watched it at 10.
That's what I'm saying. Sometimes I look back and I think like, was I old enough to be able to like,
yeah,
there was some creepy ass shit in that.
No,
creepy.
I didn't watch it until 5 years later when I was like a junior in high school on video. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, no, but it is funny because I just think I was glad. I was so excited for the reboot. I agree. It wasn't everything I would have wanted, but I also think like maybe I didn't appreciate the same as an adult as when I was a kid, or I don't really know. It was just, but either way, I think it still goes down as I think one of the best.
I just
TV
think
series.
It's such dreamy television, and with the score, it just takes you there.
I mean, it was completely gripping. I could not wait every week for that show to come on.
Yeah.
And my friends all felt the same way. And when it went off, you know, and they were on hiatus and it was summertime, we didn't know what to do with ourselves. You know what I mean? Like we needed some detective story. We needed something to get involved in because it was so engrossing and everybody was talking about it.
Yeah.
And also for me, it was kind of strange because when I got brought on, I didn't know anybody and they were kind of already shooting, I think. And so I was invited to this party with the cast, like out in the valley on the set. And I went out there and I didn't know anybody and I hadn't shot my stuff yet. So I really didn't know anybody at all.
Oh.
And oh my God, what is wrong with me that I can't remember her name?
Laura Flynn Boyle, Majin Amick.
No, it was Laura Palmer.
Cheryl Lee.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. Oh my God, that's amazing.
I know. I'm obsessed.
I haven't thought about this in so long. She came up to me and introduced herself, and she goes, "Let me show you around," because I didn't know anyone, and I think she kind of could sense that. And so she took me around and introduced me to everybody and showed me all the sets and what they were doing. And if it hadn't been for her, I would have been lost at sea. Wow. Like I wouldn't even know what to do because I didn't know anyone.
That's
you know,
nice.
And they weren't really coming up and talking to me because they didn't know me and I wasn't part of their group. And I think I was the only one from Invitation to Love that came to that party. So
because it was separate. I mean, you were filming the Invitation to Love scenes were probably filmed completely separate from anything with
they
the
were.
Show.
Yeah, they were.
I wonder if they're like, she's the killer. She killed Laura Palmer.
No, I really loved Cheryl. I thought she was great. She was terrific.
No, she is.
So
and
good.
And to play.
And I have to tell you, when they did the reboot, I watched the reboot and then I went back and watched the original again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I can tell you with confidence that the original was so much better.
Yeah.
It was just so weird and so great. But also, I think David Lynch was really on a roll then. I mean, I think, for me anyway, Blue Velvet is one of the best movies of all time.
I agree.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
And when that movie came out, I was living in Italy, and so I wasn't able to see it. And I remember, because it was such a scandal, like Isabella Rossellini was such a scandal because she was naked and like it was a big deal. And she was in all these Italian magazines and newspapers and stuff. but I couldn't speak Italian, so I didn't really know what they said. So I was kind of dying to see this movie. And when I got back to the States, I think I saw that movie like 16 times.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah. I was so into it. I love
that. May be the amount of times we've seen Nightmare on Elm Street Part 5.
Yeah.
I might have seen it that many times too.
I know. Well, just like a final couple questions. Well, first, I mean, we've covered Twin Peaks, but one thing I have to ask you, who is a better kisser, Nicolas Cage or Judge Reinhold from Zandalay?
Oh my God, you can't ask me that question. You can't ask me that question. I can't give you an answer for that. I can't, because, you know, it wasn't real.
Yeah.
And also, like, Nick was supposed to be a little bit scary.
Yeah.
And Judge was supposed to be my safe haven. So, yeah. Different thing.
Always go with the scary kisser. Go. Yeah. Always go with scary. No,
you know, I don't think it was as scary.
There's your answer.
Maybe that mullet. The mullet
was amazing from Nicolas Cage, by the way. I think he should have kept that.
What was amazing?
Was it a wig?
Oh, the mullet.
What was amazing?
His mullet hairstyle in the movie.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Right.
Was it a wig?
Okay. It was, what do you call it when they like
extension? Kind
of, yeah. It was like that, but they weren't very well done. You might have noticed that. Like when the first time you see him and he's framed in the doorway and he's a silhouette, you can tell it's like the bottom half of it was kind of like
straw.
It just didn't fit. It wasn't quite right. There were issues.
No, we did know the hair did look a little different, but I mean, just the mullet part, but yeah.
I think everybody was shocked, frankly. Because he looked like himself when we went through the audition process. And that's kind of what I expected. I expected him to show up on set like that. And he showed up on set with this goatee and that hair. And I think in his mind, he thought it would be really interesting if he showed up looking like Jesus Christ. Everybody was like, oh!
You're like, what? Weird. You got the scary part down. Okay, so our final question, unless you have anything else. So we ask everyone this kind of toward the end of it. What is one thing you can tell us about Nightmare 5 that you've never told any other podcaster, interviewer, convention? Just one thing, even if it's a tiny little bit of gossip.
A crumb.
A story, a crumb, one tiny detail about it. Anything.
It could be like one day on
you know I've talked about all the interesting stuff, so yeah. I feel like if I'm gonna tell you anything, it's not gonna be that interesting. I got
trust me,
my wardrobe.
Oh yeah, what about your wardrobe?
I got to keep most of it.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, okay, that is cool, because you had some
even the white dress
I did not keep. No.
Oh,
but there was a my favorite, there was a green cardigan. And I don't know what scene I wore it in, but it had all these like appliques on it, and it was bright green, and it had like roses and sayings and all this crazy.
I remember that
was my favorite.
It's cute.
I got to keep that stuff. So,
well, you got to keep the wardrobe. And
I'll tell you also, I never told anybody about the doll.
Oh yeah.
That is amazing. I just love, I love that
the doll was in my trunk for years. Yeah. Years is super creepy. And then I don't even know why I have it, because it's just like in this trunk with stuff on top of it. Like, I just need to get rid of it.
I love it. You're like, that's
at a garage sale.
You're like, that's why my house was haunted for all those years. Well, seriously, thank you so much for doing this with us.
You're so welcome.
We're so grateful, and we love you, and we're such fans.
Oh, so really, thank you. It was really nice talking to you guys.
Yeah, no, it's really been great. Thank you so much. Seriously, we're very, very grateful.
Yes, thank you so much. You're awesome.
Oh, you are welcome. You are welcome. And I hope I get to meet you someday.
Yes, we would love to. I mean, when COVID is done and we can do it, we would love to see you at a convention.
Exactly. I would love that. So just let me know once this is all over.
Yes, no, definitely. And we'll keep you posted as to when the episode is going to go up, probably in a few
weeks. Okay.
And thank you so much. You were awesome. Your stories are amazing. It's great. Seriously.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, take care. Guys. Have a good day.
Talk okay.
Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Happy Horror Time. We are so happy you've taken the time to check out our podcast.
This podcast is hosted by Matt Emmer and myself, Tim Murdoch. It's co-produced by Jacob Randall.
You can find Happy Horror Time on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, Happy TV, and many other streaming platforms.
If you'd like to stay updated, please like and follow Happy Horror Time podcast page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Happy Horror Time.
And if you'd like to contact us, send us an email at happyhorrortime@gmail.com. We'd love to hear your thoughts, your movie recommendations, and any horror celebrities you'd like us to interview.
To support the podcast, please visit patreon.com/happyhorrortime and sign up to be a patron. That'll give you access to our growing library of bonus episodes. Our goal is to release at least one bonus episode per month.
Before we go, we'd like to recommend a podcast hosted by our co-producer, Jacob Randall. It's a true crime podcast called Crime of Your Life, in which Jacob takes a look at unsolved criminal cases and other mysteries while examining the true crime genre itself. It's incredibly engaging, and we definitely recommend it.
I'm Tim Murdoch.
And I'm Matt Emmert. And
thanks again for listening to
Happy Horror Time.